from the Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier. I am Rick Hale. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Again, welcome. Good evening, Karen. How you doing?
Hey, I'm very well. I keep waiting for you when you go into your intro to say something like, I'm Chevy Chase, and you're not.
Jane, you ignorant slut.
That would be me. Oh, you watch out. You're going to lose your sponsors if you call me that.
So Karen, we have ourselves something a little bit different tonight. You want to tell our listeners what they expect tonight?
That's right. Okay, so you guys have chosen curtain number three, and behind curtain number three this evening is Bill Sweet. He is the author of the book A Journey into Prayer, Pioneers of Prayer in the Laboratory. Now, this is really interesting because this is a group of people who have scientifically studied prayer. And, you know, I'm not a big prayer person because I think I've made it pretty clear that my ties to the church are not real awesome. But I find this interesting, and I find people who do these studies into things like prayer and intention very interesting.
Well, you know, there's definitely does appear to be something behind the idea of prayer. Now, whether or not it's, you know, a supreme being who's actually the driving force behind whatever it is that prayer does, or is it some kind of like, you know, harmonic convergence thing where you got a bunch of people, you know, you're on somebody's prayer chain at their church or, you know, whatever, and then they all get together, they put their minds together, and boom, you're miraculously healed. I personally don't know.
Or is it confirmation bias?
It could very well be.
That's right. So there is actually a researcher, and I'm not going to be able to come up with her name right now. She lives in Great Britain, and her first name is Lynn. And it's just gone from my head because I'm old and I forget things and, you know, probably belong in an Alzheimer's ward. So that being said, Lynn McTaggart, I think it's Lynn McTaggart. Anyway, she's done a lot of research with intention and done a lot of stuff. The intention she calls it the intention experiment. And she looks at it as a quantum function of the zero point field, that there's this kind of like Edgar Cayce talked about, that there's this collective, and that right. when enough people focus on the same intention, it can create outcomes. And that's a positive thing, but it's also a scary thing too, if you think about it. For instance, what if we did an interview with this guy for our 2012 issue of Paranormal Underground magazine a couple years ago, back when we thought that, you know, when everybody was saying, well, 2012 is the end and that type of thing. There's a guy.
It's going to be the zombie apocalypse.
That's right.
Know,
no, it's the day.
It's
the day Snooki's baby is born. Yeah, it's the day Snooki's baby is born. That's the apocalypse right there. I didn't come up with that on my own. I stole it from somebody's Facebook status. So holla. Anyway, but my point is that this guy, he has something called the Webbot Project. I've talked about this a lot. And the Webbot Project was originally created by these two guys as a way to mine data from the internet and predict trends in stocks, bonds, and other types of securities, as well as commodities and that type of thing. So for the financial markets. Well, what he started to discover is that he felt that it was also predictive of other things too. And so, because it would gather words and keywords and words surrounding keywords and then create trends from that. So he truly believes that this predicted that the world is going to end in 2012. He believes that the Webbot Project is saying that. And so my thought about that, about what the information he has gathered and about 2012 is, well, what if it's all of these people who, because they believe something is going to happen, what if that becomes intention or prayer that actually shifts something and makes something happen? And so I believe that that's actually more likely what's happening, is he's picking up what people are saying, and that creates more buzz. And that creates that's my thought. Go on.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking too that, you know, like the whole, like when that self-help thing, The Secret, was huge a few years ago, it's like, think positively and good things are going to happen to you. You know what? In my opinion, you can think positively all you want. You have to make things happen for yourself.
Well, that's because people don't read beyond. People want the good news message. And the good, good news message is ask and it shall be given. Yeah. But there have been a lot of kind of gurus that have come out over the years. Not gurus. People who channel, people who write books about this stuff. And what they all almost say is that thinking positive and changing the way you think changes your experience. That's absolutely true. Because it changes my experience of something by how I choose to deal with it.
Sure.
That being said, thought creates word, because when you think it, you speak it. And when you think it and speak it, it creates action.
Sure.
So I think that what people want the good news message, which is that all I have to do is, you know, Stuart Smalley, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me.
Yeah.
And that's the first step. But then there's also, you have to also put that into action. That's what I believe.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm just going to use this as an example. And I mean, I'm, you know, 3 years ago, I weighed 325 pounds. Okay. Now, I could have thought myself thin if I wanted to. It's like, I'm going to be thin. I'm going to be thin. But no, because people in my family are genetically predisposed to being complete fat asses. So it's like, I had not to just think about it. I had to think about it and work on it. And that's what I'm talking about. You have to make things happen for yourself. There is nothing that is going to magically give you what you desire. Work for it.
But that's what I'm telling you, is the mindset is the first part, because if you don't have the mindset, then you never work on it. And that's what I believe. But then I've never been good at faith.
Ever. No, neither have I.
And I would love to. I'm actually envious of people who have faith.
Yes.
But I sadly have never been good at it. I'm working on it. I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to listen to my instincts, and you know, but it's a big stretch for me. So
sure.
It should be an interesting conversation, and maybe we'll learn a little something, huh?
Right. No, I absolutely hope so. And hey, maybe we'll both come out as believers in something bigger than ourselves, I guess. Something creator. I don't know.
Well, I actually do believe in the Einsteinian version of God.
Okay.
I believe that there is an underlying intelligence to the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And an underlying order, and that's created. I just don't believe in a personal God.
See, and myself as being a Buddhist, basically we believe in I think, therefore I am. So, yes. You know, there's no reason for a creator, but that doesn't mean that there can't be a spiritual realm to things.
Right.
Most definitely. It just,
right.
You know, it's maybe our thoughts do bring about the unthinkable or the unbelievable. I don't know, but maybe we'll talk to Bill and we'll find out tonight.
I hope so, because that'd be really fascinating. So, hey, before we actually get Bill on the phone, wanted to bring up a couple of things that are coming up. Well, one in particular. This weekend in Oregon City, Oregon, is the Oregon Ghost Conference. You can go to OregonGhostConference.com, I believe it is. And there's going to be a lot of really great speakers, a lot of great teams there. I'm going to be speaking at it, and we'll have a table and stuff. So if you're somebody who listens to the show, and we really appreciate all of you who do, our listeners are a big deal to us. I would love to meet you. I'd love to see you face to face. So
the
stop
four
on
people
by
that listen to us.
The four people that listen to us. If one of those four people happens to be in Oregon this weekend, stop by and say hi. That's all I'm saying.
And if you're ever in Chicago, I'll take you out for some pizza. How about that?
Yeah, are you going to be shocked if it's like five people and then you have to buy pizza for five people?
You know what? I know good places to go for cheap for good cheap pizza. So
that's right, the Chicago style pizza.
And Chicago style pizza. That's
Chicago
right.
Chicago style pizza. So that's coming up this weekend in Oregon City, and I hope that you'll stop by. I'm speaking at some point on Saturday, but you know what? I'm far from the headliner. There are a lot of really really fascinating people talking. So. And it's just a good time. So there you go. All right.
Sounds good.
Yep. So let's do this. Let's go to a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Bill Sweet, and we're going to be talking a little bit about prayer. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on Z Talk Radio. Stick around.
If you are a small business, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
In her riveting novel, Breaking the Beyond, writer Kim Casey brings to life a supernatural tale filled with mystery, humor, and intrigue. Kim's suspenseful story focuses on Risa, a compassionate social worker who assists Owen, a young psychiatric patient. Is a 300-year-old entity speaking through Owen, or does he simply possess multiple personalities? Visit awningpublishing.ca to order your copy of Breaking the Beyond. That's A-H-N-E-E-N publishing.ca.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. We are your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale. Tonight, we prefaced it a little bit. We got a little something different for you guys tonight. We're going to be talking about prayer. And the person we're going to be talking to is Bill Sweet, who is the author of A Journey into Prayer, Pioneers of Prayer in the Laboratory. He is involved with Spindrift Research. I was hoping I was pronouncing that right. And that was started by Bruce and John Klingbeil in 1969. And, you know, Bill, welcome to the underground. You guys take a really strict scientific view of studying prayer, correct?
Yes. Well, what happened was that myself, I've always been interested in paranormal things and religious things. I'm trying to find a combination.
Okay.
And what happened was it's just amazingly, three towns over from me in Schaumburg, Illinois, you probably know where that is.
Oh, sure.
There were two Christian Science practitioners who were involved in spiritual healing who also had scientific backgrounds and were amateur scientists on the side, and they were trying to also find ways to validate some of the claims associated with prayer and other religious phenomena, but mostly and psychic phenomena too, for the matter of fact, but mostly the spiritual phenomena. And
okay.
I hooked up with them through, it was very fortuitous, and they had an organization called Spindrift that was begun in 1969 that does research where they bring people in from different religious backgrounds and test their prayers on plants,
okay.
plants that are deviated from the normal state to see if they can affect change in the plants. And just to show that there, in fact, is an effect. And I got involved in it that way, and it's been pretty controversial and pretty exciting right now on the line.
Sure.
One of the things about it that was most interesting, and it's probably our society today is that since they both worked, Bruce and John Klingbeil, father and son, worked as Christian Science practitioners, they noticed that it was pretty obvious when somebody wasn't healed and prayer didn't work. But when it did work, people often were at first excited about it, and then if they had a healing or something that was pretty definite, you could tell it was derived from prayer.
Okay.
Later on, they would either forget they had the healing or deny they had it or attribute to something else. So these societal things came in where the doubt was entered in. So I said, well, gee, it doesn't do a whole lot of good if there's people walking around who have been benefited by prayer, but then they later on dismiss it. So they thought, well, maybe it's a good idea. We try to show them the fact that there is something to the phenomenon rather than just believe or people believe it or don't. Let's test it and find out. So that was one of the reasons they did it.
That's really really interesting. So tell me a little bit about, because I'm not a Christian scientist, is a Christian Science practitioner, is that somebody who, when somebody has health problems, they come to and they pray for them? Or what's a Christian Science?
That is exactly it, right on the money. They're counselors too, and they and give spiritual advice and help with interpretations, but they mostly are on board with helping people pray. They pray along with people.
Okay.
For them. And they've been at it for, 1866 on. And there's not too many practitioners around, but this is all they do. And
okay.
I'm fortunate to meet some of them.
Well, that seems like something that the Christian Science Church would get behind, having scientific proof that what they're doing worked.
Well, you would think so, but it's very interesting, and I think that you guys probably have done a lot of reading into how different organizations and groups and religions, and they start out, but then the people that carry on will usually get away from the original foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And originally, Christian Science was heavily into this religion-science connection. In fact, the person who started was Mary Baker Eddy, a woman, and she was pretty wild for her day. I mean, she was supported Darwin, and she did experiments, and she also was quite a healer, and she uses the word science over 1,000 times in her book, Science and Health with the Key to the Scriptures. But the emphasis on healing got so out of emphasized that these other things kind of got diminished to the point where they didn't really want to look into it, and it kind of got scared a lot of the Christian scientists, this idea of proof, which is very ironic because it's the very thing that they tell you that they're interested in. But it's not only that. It's not only that. We found that a lot of people in different religions were quite offended by the idea of that you could take somebody in and test their prayers. It sounds very sacrilegious and tempting the Lord to a lot of people.
Well, but God created science, too, if you believe that God created everything else. Right. And, you know, I wonder if maybe the objection, is the objection that once you prove it, faith is no longer a factor?
Well, I think the fear is you might disprove it. But in some cases, I think maybe that could be true, too, what you're saying. You actually have a new idea there. I really hadn't thought about it. I wonder if anybody else in Scripture has. I think faith is still part of the mix in the sense of thinking of faith as an openness to intuition and these things flowing through you, divine love and things like that. You need all those elements, and they relate to faith too. But it is this understanding of law more than the faith that might in fact be something that bothers people. It sounds a little impersonal when you start getting the spiritual laws versus this undefined supernatural influence that comes in and heals. They say, you have an idea there.
But now let me
ask... The culture would prefer a religious thing that you could not understand but believe rather than when you start believing it. In fact, there is a point there. I read about this in my book, A Journey into Prayer by Bill Sweet, that if you talk about these things generally, about prayer and healing and psychic karma and how you are affected by spiritual influences and divine this and that, that's fine. You can talk about that. But once you bring up this idea of science and proving things, then you've crossed a line with some people. That's when they start not liking what you're saying.
Well, I understand that, though, because, sorry, Rick, don't mean to step on your toes, but just one of the things that I associate with religious belief, and I was raised in the church, in the Christian church, is that there's a sense of ineffability when it comes to faith and God and religion. And if you start to explain it, that goes away.
What goes away? The ineffability?
I think so, in some sense.
Yes, that's right, and I think that bothers them. Now, we can't understand everything, but why in a modern age wouldn't we want to know more about God and His creation rather than less? It's kind of strange.
Right.
But it's ingrained. It's ingrained. You're right. It's part of this ingraining. Mm-hmm. It comes from religion. So that would offend some people right there.
Yeah.
But ironically, it should not offend the Christian science.
Right. Go ahead, Rick.
I was just going to say, but there appears to be sort of a shift in our society or even in our culture. Since 1969, it seems that we've gone to being less religious and more spiritual. Now, in a lot of, you get your Eastern religions, you know, Buddhism, Hinduism, there is prayer, but not prayer like we would normally have here in the Western world, where, you know, we're praying for healing or, you know, stuff of that nature. It seems that there has definitely been a shift in that kind of thinking in our culture. Would you say that's true, Bill?
Well, I would say that that's what people are calling it. I think it's more of a fad. I think there are some people that are religious, but they're afraid to say that because they want to say spiritual because that's the hip thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like musicians, you know. I love all music, but I don't like rap and country and Western. But I am a musician, and I like all music. I mean, it's just, I think that this religious thing is something that's, it seems to be on the outs to talk about it these days. I mean, I don't see a problem with both being spiritual and religious, but some people, you know, they make this great distinction. And sometimes I meet people and they tell me they're spiritual. I have no idea quite what they mean. It just seems to be the thing to say.
It's spiritual. Yeah, exactly. So I noticed as I was reading around on the site that you actually have a pretty strict categorization system for types of prayers. So there are more than one type of prayer, and the different types of prayers actually have different results, don't they?
Yes. Well, there are many styles and motivations in prayer. There's many types of prayer. There's prayer for forgiveness, there's prayer of thanksgiving, prayer of gratitude, on and on. And what we found was that we, at Spindrift, and the founders of Spindrift, Bruce and John Kleinball, we had to come up with a system of testing prayer so we could make distinctions. So they distinguished between what they called goal-directed prayer, a prayer that has a goal. Often in Christianity, this is referred to as petitionary prayer. It's when you ask for something specific.
So, like, God, please give me a boat?
Yes, we hear that a lot, don't we? In the lottery and have my football team win.
Yeah, Janis Joplin song.
Exactly, yes. and then there's also the Rolling Stones where they say, you might not always get what you want, but you always get what you need, you know that one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so the thing is that wanting prayer, when you want a specific thing, that's goal-directed prayer. And that's fine, but often in our culture, it backfires. And I mean, Jesus recommended goal-directed prayer. He said, ask and you shall receive, but then he also does say, and this is really quoted, that a lot of people ask for the wrong things. They ask for things, as he puts it, to just fill their lusts. The way Jesus puts it. So in other words, people do ask for the wrong things, and we find that a lot of goal-directed prayer is asking for the wrong thing. Now that actually is a very powerful prayer. Then we contrast that with what we call non-goal-directed prayer, thy will be done prayer, when you let go of your own agenda and your own plans, let the divine power flow through the mind and bring a result that you don't anticipate. We find non-goal-directed prayer is a superior. You want to say spiritual versus religious prayer, because it results in something that's best for the situation. And like with the Rolling Stones, you get what you need with non-goal-directed prayer versus getting what you want. Our wants aren't always right desires.
So when you have I'm having a little bit of trouble with the non-goal-directed prayer. Then, I mean, is that just saying, for instance, if I'm praying and I say, I would like to be used for my highest purpose, whatever that is. Is that goal-directed or non-goal-directed?
No, that would be a non-goal-directed goal, and that's fine.
Okay, so
your motive is right. Your motive is right. For instance, remember King Solomon, God asked King Solomon what he wanted, and he said, give me wisdom. It was a specific thing, and he said, as long as you ask for that, not money and concubines, and he ended up with all that anyway. But anyway, the point is that he asked for wisdom, and that's a good thing. So you can not all goals are wrong, and when non-goal directed prayer just means that you are getting your plans out of the way and being open. And what you just said was being open to how you can be used for the best situation. That's getting yourself out of the way. That's the whole idea.
Okay.
Thy will be done.
So
how that play? Would you like to know how that plays out in the experiments?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, to begin with the experiments with the plants, the different plant systems, there's three results, basically. Some people pray or whatever they do, meditate, or even bring people in the city that aren't doing anything. They just think they're psychically connecting with the plants. Some people get no results, so that's one thing. So their results would look the same as a control group, which gets no results. Then you have the two other categories. You have the way that goal-directed prayer affects a plant and non-goal-directed prayer affects a plant. And this gets really interesting. Essentially, when somebody is brought in, most people don't have an idea what the problem is with the plants or what they need, but they have an idea in their head from our culture that bigger is better and it needs more of this and it needs more of that. Even though they don't even know what that is, this is kind of culturally ingrained in their thoughts, so it influences their prayers.
Right.
And so they, with the goal in mind of making the plant better, they actually affect it, but they're actually pushing it in a direction that it doesn't necessarily benefit it. It just makes it have more of this or that.
Okay.
With the non-goal-directed prayer, we find that the needs of the plant, which is unknown usually to the person praying, are met. So it's kind of interesting. The person praying is drawing on an intelligence. They don't know what that is, but the intelligence knows what the needs are in the situation. And from consciousness, this is imputed to the plants, and the plants are moved in the direction of normalcy. So we can track both of these things.
You know what it reminds me of? Masaru Emoto, the messages from water, where he put the stuff on water. And do you know what I'm talking about?
Sure.
Yeah,
I wish I had.
It sounds kind of along the same lines of that, although it sounds like you guys did it more scientifically, but kind of the same type of concepts.
Well, he showed that a bad motive can make water molecules and really its crystals mess up, and a harmonious thought can show the symmetry of the molecules.
Yeah.
So there is a similarity in that sense. So there's an effect both ways, no question. But are we actually benefiting something by psychically manipulating it? This gets into a very interesting area. And a lot of the thought going around the world today is manipulation, and people think it's something spiritual, and it isn't.
Right.
They don't know, though. They don't know.
Yeah. No, I definitely deal with some very manipulative people on a daily basis, and they're all under the age of 16.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Well, there's other people that just don't know they're doing this, and they think they're benefiting something. It's
so,
kind of startling.
So, like, if people get together to pray for to end a drought in Africa or something, you're saying that that's more manipulation. Is that what I understand you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The way you would handle. Yes. Yes, it is. And you could probably end up. Art Bell, if you recall, did a lot of consciousness experiments.
Mm-hmm.
Where
yes.
they would pray about floods and all this. And so what they found out was that maybe it benefits something in one area, but it's moved to another area that has a disaster someplace else. So it's like squeezing the balloon when you have this goal-directed prayer. So the non-goal-directed prayer would be more one of thinking about something that nobody else is thinking about. The interesting thing about non-goal-directed prayer, you're praying about something in secret, unknown to a lot of other minds, and it's looking for unexpected results. And when you are thinking of the non-goal-directed in a situation like that, of course, this is a macro situation, so there's no way to really know if prayer is working or not. That's why experiments on us, micro level, are more interesting to show that something's going on. But we all believe this, so let's do it.
Okay.
On the larger level, where you're praying non-goal-directed, you would pick some element that somebody isn't thinking of. For instance, let's say you just pray about agriculture. You don't have to bring in a storm into it. You're just praying that God's harmonious plans for the plants to grow in a field in that area are going to be protected. And you're not even thinking about anything else. But nobody's thinking that. They're looking at they're looking at the flood, they're looking at the fear, they're looking at the tornadoes. And something like that has an interesting influence on the situation because it's a counter current of thought that nobody else is working on and has quite an effect.
Mm-hmm.
So you look for the unexpected in non-goal-directed prayer. Don't do what everybody else is doing. That's mass manipulation.
So does that mean that, because there seems to be a very popular belief that, well, it's probably arises from the biblical whenever two of more or more of me are gathered in his name.
Right.
So it seems that there's a belief that there's more effectiveness in numbers.
Well, this is an interesting thing, quantity versus quality.
Yeah.
That's another way to look at this, too, between goal-directed prayer and non-goal-directed prayer. Goal-directed prayer deals with quantity. Non-goal-directed prayer deals with quality. Now, you can have people get together and do this who are praying correctly. But what we were interested in doing at Spindrift, and I read a lot about this in my book, A Journey into Prayer, by the way, by Bill Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
We want to think of getting people on teams, like a basketball team. You would have one team that was real good at goal-directed prayers, and another team was real good at non-goal-directed prayers. So you have to have people go through a whole testing process to find out which type of personality they have and tendency they have to pray in this direction and get the people all on the same page on the same team. And then you could, in fact, have people two or three gathered in their name or more and have an effect. I write about this in a speech I gave in a consciousness conference. If people go to our Spindrift website, spindriftresearch.org or spindriftresearch.com, it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
And if they go to the documents page, the last thing there is a speech I gave on the difference between the individual praying and the group praying. So praying for a group. So some people might want to look at that. It addresses what you're asking there.
You know what? It's interesting that you say that because, Karen, you know, we've been talking to actually a lot of our guests lately about the Philip experiment.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Now, this kind of fits in with that. I mean, these investigators and psychical researchers, excuse me?
He said Philip in.
Oh,
we're going.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Bill. The Philip experiment happened up in Canada back in the...
connection. I can't hear you anyway.
Oh, can you hear us now?
I'm going to have to hang up, Cody. I lost my connection. I should just hang. I just probably have to hang up and they'd call me back.
Yeah, Cheryl, we're going to have to call him back. So this would be a really good time to take our break, I think.
Yeah.
And we'll get Bill back. And it's really a very interesting conversation. We're talking about prayer, and we're talking about how it actually manifests and ways to do it that are effective. And so we'll be back with Bill Sweet in just a minute, Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Stick around.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com. Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hi there, this is Sammy Hagar here for RAD, the entertainment industry's voice for road safety. Now, style's a personal thing, and your lifestyle is your business. But if you take it on the road, it becomes everybody else's business. Please plan ahead. Designate before you celebrate. Because friends do not let friends drive drunk. Drive, drive,
drive, a public service message brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
Thank you.
Buzz.
You're listening to ZZ Talk Radio Network.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale. For the last 30 minutes or so, we have been talking to Bill Sweet, author and scientific experimenter of prayer. Welcome back to the show. Bill, thanks for sticking around for a little bit.
No problem. Thank you.
So before we went to break, actually, we had a little bit of a technical difficulty there, but before we went to break, we were talking about something intention with prayer. Now, I referenced the Philip experiments. It's actually a very kind of really actually kind of a big deal in psychical research and parapsychological research as well, where a group of parapsychologists and students and paranormal type people, they got together up in Toronto, Canada, in 1972, and actually created a ghost, and they called him Philip. And they had evidence that they were actually dealing with something that did seem like it was a separate intelligence, a separate entity from themselves. And they created this with intent. Their intent was to create a ghost was created. Now, are you saying that's the same thing with prayer?
Well, when you talk about gold rush prayer, you could relate to that.
Okay.
In other words, a lot of people, let's say they're not even being spiritual about it. They go in and says, this is my intention. All the stuff we heard on the Oprah Winfrey Show, again, bring your intention in and just you can get to your intention. But other people, when they apply it to prayer, they include in their prayer a goal to get a specific result and their intention. So in that sense, if it's right for you to have it, then the divine is in that. But usually people are just using intention and they're using the spiritual as an excuse to get what they want.
Mm-hmm.
The law of attraction is often abused this way, I found. People are just using it to get things rather
right.
than making any kind of adjustments in their life that they really should be making.
Right.
Now, we were talking about that a little bit too, Karen and I. It seems it's very selfish to me.
It's close human nature to want what you want and to want to try and sort of manipulate things.
That's the problem with using what Spindrift calls, and you actually hit it right on the money, we call it selfish spirituality. Using it to get what you want. We propose that the divine is always interested in what you need. It's meeting your needs, not what you want. And in that process, you probably will get some things you want. But not everything you want is good for you. So you are right. You can create your own reality, and you can use goal-directed prayer that way. Not always, but it can be done. Now goal-directed prayer, we are claiming, produces a different effect. We are saying that when you switch from the brain over to praying non-goal-directed, that you are actually tuning in to divine intelligence that knows what is needed in a situation. It can be very complex scenarios there.
Mm-hmm.
And the needs will be met by the intelligence that's between you and the situation being prayed for. So you are drawing on laws and powers that you're not even aware of, but your part in it is to acknowledge it and affirm it.
Now,
so in that sense, your intention is to not get your goals in the way. So this is not creating anything. This is actually drawing on the divine intelligence because you have no idea what is the result is going to be.
Now, let me ask you something before we, cut to the other thing that we were going to talk about. Now, you talk about this intelligence. Now, when you talk about intelligence, do you mean like a divine creator God that, created everything, including our lowly selves?
We would say that if we were talking out of school, yes, but being a scientific group, we would say that the claim bios have come up with what they think would be a good term, and maybe even an atheist could accept, to describe
mm-hmm.
God, and that would be the ordering force in the universe.
Okay.
That's what you're drawing about.
So is that something, is the ordering force similar to like what you might hear about in some of the people who do some of the more spiritual quantum physics, the zero-point field?
It could relate to that, yes, and it may end up relating to that. We'll see.
Okay.
And what we're not concerned with at Spindrift, and a lot of people like us to do this, as religious people, we're not out to prove the existence of God. That's something people have to find out on their own. However, I personally think that someday that will be an experiment that could be done. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, that would be quite interesting.
What non-goal-directed prayer produces differently than goal-directed prayer is what the Kleinbiles, who founded Spindrift, call, quote, ordering effects. The ordering of force produces ordering effects. You see these effects of order that relate to the norms in a system, what normalizes a system and brings things better. It also relates to creativity, when things are created and made better in music or dance or any art form. It's the influence of the ordering effects that make things better. And ordering effects are the result of being open to the unexpected, bringing something new into existence. You're not creating it. You're bringing something new into existence. For instance, the airplane always existed, but somebody had to be open to it to try it out and bring it into existence.
Sure.
And so it existed. It existed. Whereas with the goal-directed intention, you are yourself with your own human mind creating things. So there's a distinction there between the human mind and the divine mind. Mm-hmm. And we think that we can make an argument for that experimentally. And it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out in the future, because that's kind of a claim that a lot of people don't like to hear. They just want to think everything is intention, everything is belief, everything is the same type of thought. And you're saying, no, there is one type of thought that is manipulative thought, or if it's the right thing for you to have, you certainly can have specific goals. And then in that case, it actually is overlapping a little bit with ordering effects. And then the other is that with non-goal-directed thought, I will be done thought, you are actually bringing into your presence ordering effects that correct a situation. And that's what a healer does. A healer brings ordering effects into a situation that mends the situation.
Right.
And you just sit back and see what happens.
Right. So in some ways, because one of the words you hear a lot in both religion and spirituality is surrender. And so when you're talking about non-goal-directed prayer, then it sounds like what it really is surrender.
Yes, I think that's a wonderful way to look at it. It's a wonderful summation.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What surrender is getting your ego and getting your agenda and your ideas and plans out of the way. And that isn't easy. It's not easy for me to break about it either. I can tell you, when I took the Spindrift test, a lot of the time I got the goal-directed results. I didn't want to, but I did. I just have so many agendas in my own mind. It's not easy to get clear thought on this. It's not an easy thing. Some people are naturally this way, though. They're just naturally non-goal-directed.
Yeah. Right. Well, Jesus was somebody who was probably non-goal-directed. Buddha was...
Oh, you better believe it.
Yeah, Buddha was probably somebody, but the rest of us are mere mortals with egos. And those egos, yeah. I think the hardest thing for all of us is to get out of the way of our own egos. It is for me.
It is. Yeah. It's the hardest thing. The surrender thing is very difficult. And we find that personality types actually play into this. We find that for an introvert, it's much easier to be non-goal-directed than an extrovert.
Hmm.
That's another observation we made.
Interesting. So I wanted to... with the prayer experiments, is it allowed or is it silent?
Well, people can pray however they want, but we find that in our tests, we mostly prayed silent prayers. But when you bring people up from different traditions, you can't tell them what to do. They have to do. You can't start manipulating them. They can do what they want.
Right.
The problem with verbal prayer is, number one, your skeptics will make the argument that their voices are causing airwaves, and maybe that's affecting the leaf of a plant or something crazy like that to dismiss. It's true. And then the other thing is, too, when you're playing aloud, you are actually broadcasting to other people, so they are getting into their thought what you're thinking, and now their thoughts are going to start interfering with the experiment.
Oh, sure. That's true. So silent prayer is kind of control.
This is a good time for me to tell you the secret to prayer.
Okay.
Because that's the thing. And you bring up Jesus Christ. The secret to prayer is to pray in secret. When Jesus said, go into your closet, close the door, and pray in secret to the Father who will reward you in secret. That is the way to do it. Otherwise, you're bringing other people into it. You're letting yourself open to all kinds of forces and influences. So there is a spiritual advantage to silent prayer, because you're not letting other people in on your secret. And there's a certain paranoia to prayer. You don't want to know what other people are thinking about you. You don't want people thinking about you. They're interfering with you. So
do you think that
prayer is to not let your agenda, your plans, the spiritual plans in it, get out there into the public mind? Because then you're contaminated.
Now,
not easy to do.
Right,
Bill. Let me ask you this though: do you think that do you think psychic ability could play a major part in this?
Well, this is the thing. In fact, you asked a good question, and we just absolutely. And I wrote my book. I've gotten a lot of people write me and hate mail and all kinds of things. How dare you say that psychic ability and spiritual ability are basically the same thing? What we're saying is, at Spindra, is that holy thought and prayer is at the
must
upper
be
end.
Fans.
Yeah, or is at the upper end of psychic ability. It's a divine psychic. It's part of this whole spectrum of psychic. It's at the upper end, just like in music. They say classical music is up at the top of the food chain in music. We would say that the spiritual and religious thoughts are that's the psychic area. That's true, and it's amazing to me that you watch all these TV evangelists and all these. You go to different churches and they're doing all these paranormal things, and they deny the paranormal. It's just strange.
Yeah.
Right. So I wanted to ask you about the name Spindrift. What's it mean?
Well, I didn't like it when I first heard it, but I do now. It's because everybody remembers that. If they don't remember anything else, it's a nautical term. If you look, when people go to the website, spindriftresearch.org, and click book news, you'll see my book there on the cover of my book, which is, by the way, hardcover, softcover, and on Kindle.
Okay.
On a Journey in the cover is a picture of Spindrift. It's the tip of a wave during a hurricane or a cyclone out in the ocean. And it's the wind blowing the spray that's created. And it's a very fast-moving spray. It's moving so fast that the spindrift, if it hits your face, it's like little nails going into your face. That's how fast it's moving. And the idea for our group is that we're doing cutting-edge consciousness research at the edge of the visible material world and the invisible psychic and consciousness world. It's right at this edge here. It's a very turbulent area. And that's the spindrift edge of the wave. And that's how
that's
came
cool.
up with the term.
Yeah, it's very cool.
I like that very much. Yeah. Well, so I wanted, the other thing is we were talking off the air, and so I already told you I was going to ask you about this, but Rick and I were talking at the beginning of the show about 2012 and how there's this consciousness and this concern that people seem to have that something is going to happen this year in 2012 because of the Mayan calendar or whatever. And
you saw the cartoon about the Mayan calendar, didn't you? You saw that cartoon that's going around, haven't you?
I think I have. Yeah,
I'm not sure if I have.
Terrific. Oh, it's a riot. But everybody will wonder what I'm talking about. But anyway, I'll send it to you.
Okay.
The point is that a lot of this, we talked about this. We get together and have rap sessions, and this is just speculation. But we think a lot of this is sidetracking what the real fear is. I think since 9/11 and since the Y2K thing didn't happen, that was a big fear. Remember Y2K, and then that fell apart. And then they had 9/11, which is probably the most real form of fear we've ever had. But I think that things like 2012 and all this is things to sidetrack us from the things in the world that are really, really are a problem. It's a way of not facing up to the problems of the world. And in the process of doing this, we are creating more of a mess. We think about it so much. And what you think about it creates a reality. So in a way, the very people who are worried about 2012 are creating some kind of chaos, fear-oriented. And it's too bad. Whereas they've been sidetracked from other things that they should be thinking about that are more important. I mean, we all like to be sidetracked. But and we all need a little distraction. But the fact is that there are a lot of things that do need our immediate attention, and these other things seem to be things that we think about rather than what we should be thinking about.
So do you think that these things that distract us from that distract us with the fear, what is it distracting us from? Love, or is it distracting us from something else?
Well, I think that actually, even though there's been, when I give a talk, I usually start out with this quote we've all heard: "These are the best of times, and these are the worst of times." From the book we all read in high school, and "The Tale of Two Cities." And the thing is that the world seems to be making some spiritual progress. But it seems like it's going backwards in some other areas, and these other areas are pretty dark.
Yeah.
I mean, the terrorism thing and the nuclear bomb thing and the Iran thing.
Yeah.
These are, and then the cars too. I just look at the condominium complex I live in. We have 11% foreclosures.
Oh, and there's school shootings. There's all sorts of bad stuff going on. There was another shooting today at school, you know?
Right. Maybe we need to get through all these things to get to, you know, the quote-unquote golden age.
Well, maybe so, but when we're projecting out into 2012 and all kinds of things like that, we're not facing up to our immediate thing. And that's the problem. We need to take care of our immediate problem.
Right.
And just, people don't mm-hmm. seem to want to do this. And when I went to a Jewish high school, I wasn't Jewish, but it had a great influence on me, and it just embedded in us. Never let another Holocaust happen. Never let another wipe out of people happen. And this, and it seems like it's all happening all over again.
Yes,
we're going the wrong way here. And this is what needs our attention. This is what needs our prayers. And by the way, I should say that we should. This is going to sound strange, but we should be praying for ourselves, basically, because it's all this chaos that's going in our thought. We don't really pray for the world. We pray for our own thought. If we're the one that's scared and shaken up, it doesn't do us any good to project love and out there to the world, because we're not a very good conduit of it if the source of it ourselves is not full of the right thoughts. So basically, right. We need to do a lot more prayer for ourselves to eliminate fear and face up to our problems and deal with problems. A lot of people don't want to do that. They want to play those video games.
Head in the sand, right?
But that's it. I mean, people escape into entertainment, or they escape into drugs, or they escape into whatever it is, electronics, whatever it is that they escape into, because that's easier than thinking about the more pressing stuff. So you say that we need to pray for ourselves, but how do I pray for myself in a way that's not goal-directed?
Oh, that's not a problem. You just pray for the enduring light to fill you up, and you will get you're praying for, this is an okay goal, praying for a higher concept of divine love, and you want to feel that yourself so you can express it out and project it out to other people. And also you want to be open to unexpected ways to solve your problems, if they're financial or whatever. You don't look for the common way everybody else is telling you to do something. Look for the unexpected. Steve Jobs was a real good example of this. He never did anything like anybody else ever did it. Everything he did was completely unexpected.
Yeah.
One way or another, he had an inherited a mind that was able to completely operate in a non-goal-directed way. It was amazing.
Yeah. So when I visualize, for instance, because I'm not necessarily somebody who prays, but I do meditate. And when I do a lot of visualization, and I do a lot of visualization about things like white light coming down and moving through my chakras and things like that. Is that a way of non-goal directed prayer? I mean, is that sufficient, or do I need to change the way I'm praying?
I think you have to mix it up a little bit.
Okay.
Don't get into a formula. Don't do the same thing every time. It's fine. I mean, it'll work, but just don't say I'm going to do this every day the same way. Then it's getting into it. Then it becomes goal directed. Just the mere fact that it's turning into a formula.
No, I do what's intuitive.
Ways. Pardon me?
I do what's intuitive, whatever that is.
I think that's fine. I think that's fine. Yeah, goal directed is not intuitive. Goal directed, you know, I'm going to make this thing work or else. It's not intuitive. It's a very hard line.
Yeah, I gave up on that a long time ago.
By the way, that's pretty powerful. I mean, we found in our research at Spindrift that the goal-directed prayers are much more powerful in a way, because there's more of a drive and direct point A to point B in them than non-goal-directed prayers. But it's the non-goal-directed prayers that work subtly in unexpected results that are the more spiritual and the ones that bring the longer-term solutions.
Oh, well, that's interesting. So that's a difference between the quick fix that may not be great for you and something that's going to actually create a shift.
Correct. We all heard the joke about guy prays for God for a lamp. Prays to God for a Escalade, Cadillac Escalade.
Mm-hmm.
And guy says, okay, I'll give you the Escalade, but I had a Lamborghini in mind for you.
Yeah, it's so...
I mean, something even better, you know.
It's not necessarily what you want.
I call that, I actually refer to that as limiting God, that when you pray for something, you limit what you get in return.
And that's correct. That's correct. When we have our own goals in the way, we are limiting the divine from coming into us. It's exactly correct. And this is what we found in our experiments. What we want to do is produce and occasion ordering effects. Ordering effects bring harmony to a situation. But instead, we limit God and we put our own projections out there and we start manipulating things with our mind. I mean, there's no power. There's a lot of power in psychic manipulation, but we unfortunately are doing more harm than good and we don't know it. Or we're hindering our progress. And, right. And we can also intend, like you said a moment ago, for something to appear now, but in the long run, it won't help us.
Right. I wanted to ask you, Bill, about negative prayer. Because there have got to be people out there that are, you know, praying for, I don't know, death of people, or praying for bad things to happen to their enemies.
A huge subject. We also found that some people who have goal-directed prayer, for some reason, are made up in a way with their consciousness where they're actually doing more harm than good. I mean, there's unintentional goal-directed prayer where you think you're benefiting something, but we actually tested people that could come in and they could destroy a plan or hurt a plan. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing. They just had a darkness in them. Yeah. And they knew it, and we tested it, and there it was. And we have seen a lot of examples of negative prayer. You have Catholic priests that do all this prayer for people, then they turn around and molest children. I mean, just think of all that spiritual influence that goes in a negative way into people. And they probably never connect the dots on that, but that's what it is. It's a terrible negative influence that goes probably many generations. And then, of course, 9/11 was really something where the militant Muslims were praying to destroy everything they could in the name of God.
Yeah,
and there's an you might have noticed in the bio that Spindrift was trying to tell people for years before 9/11 about the prayers that the Muslims were, the bad Muslims, that is, not the good ones, so I just have to make that clarification, the bad ones were praying against civilization.
Yeah.
And no one was interested, and they still aren't interested. I mean, there's a little bit of interest now, but after 9/11, you thought there would have been an interest. They just, people, it's kind of like this 2012 thing. People do not want to face up to the consequences of negative prayer or the bad things that are going on.
Sure. Yeah. But you know what somebody would be interested in is if it pertains directly to them. So if you've got somebody who hates your guts and they're praying against you and they're doing the negative prayer, can that affect you? Can you counteract that? Because you know what? That's going to be something that somebody's going to pay attention to because it's about them.
Well, guess what? If everything I said today has an inkling of truth in it, we better all do a better job of protecting ourselves on a daily basis because people are praying against us. Believe me, there's people working against us all the time. And
I will meet these people and I will destroy them.
There you are. So we need to get our bubble up. We have to pray today that the divine laws of God are protecting us, and we want to have more love in us than hate, so that we are not returning hate with hate.
Sure.
And protect ourselves, because another thing too is that Spindrift has done experiments with Faraday cages, and we can't prove this. What I'm going to say now is completely speculation, but I'm telling you, I think it's one of the coolest things we've ever come across. Do you guys know what a Faraday cage is?
I do, but you might want to explain it for our listeners.
Yeah, okay. Myself as well.
Well, again, remember I said earlier, the secret to prayer is to go into the closet and close the door. Well, we feel the closet, non-modern society, should be made of a Faraday cage, and that's
a lead or
copper cage or room or house or however much money you want to spend. We find that the it blocks all radiation. I don't know if it blocks thought. We can't say that, but it blocks radiation. There's a lot of radio and telecommunications and satellite and radar signals are going into it that are interfering with our thinking, and it may very well clear our thinking up to be in a place where we are clear-headed so that we are able to know what to pray for, including protecting ourselves from negative prayers. Because a lot of people are spewing negative prayers out there, and it's coming in the form of disease, accident, all kinds of bad things. We write about this on the website. People want to look it up. But it's surprising. It's surprising. And what's interesting about my book, Chapter 7, for instance, those are all documented examples of people praying against Spindrift. People would send us emails and letters, and call us on the phone, and yell at us, and stand up in an audience and yell at us. I mean, these are things that actually we knew about because we could document. I could add more things, but I don't have documentation on them. But there was enough for a whole chapter.
Hold on a second. But, I mean, why would somebody do something like that? I mean, they're actually praying against you. Or I don't know. It almost sounds like, you know, that their idea of God or whatever is the Emperor from Star Wars. That's what I don't get.
I mean, you've got a good idea there. I think that's what it is. But they also think they're doing what's right, strangely enough. I also, in the footnotes, I have a dream I had one night where I was giving a talk and somebody, I was trying to point out there were people right there in the audience that were sending bad signals off so to mess up my talk. And then it came to the question and answer period. One of the fundamentalist Christians stood up in the audience. He said, "It's not evil prayers we're sending to you if we know we are right."
Oh, I love people who are so
But that's it. Everybody knows they're right. I mean, like you were saying, the militant Muslims who are praying for in their mind they're right, and the fundamentalist Christians who hate. You know, who have this doctrine of hate against people that are different than them, they believe that they're truly right. You know, and when I pray for something, I'm sure I believe I'm right because our ego tells us we are.
Yeah. Right. But what we should do is get that out of the way and thy will be done eliminates that, subtracts that. Thy will be done. Not what I think is right, but thy will be done.
So how powerful is the prayer of a single person?
Well, this is a tricky piece of business. So our best chance of this is to pray in secret, because that's our best chance for the individual to be powerful. And I talk about this in my speech on the documents page, if people want to look at this. It can be very powerful. The idea is, though, you have to be operating as a secret agent, like the military has an ops group that goes out at night with these things where they can see in the dark. I mean, you have to operate as a thief in the night type of thing. But that's when you're powerful, when people do not know what you're up to.
So when you're going out and tooting your own horn and saying, "I'm going to pray for you, and I'm going to pray for you, and I'm going to pray for you," that's less. I mean, that's not as powerful as me just going off and deciding to offer a prayer.
Well, you can offer a prayer. No, I think the stronger connection is when you have the permission of a person to pray for them, or the situation needs attention. If you're praying for somebody, they don't know what you're doing for them, and you think you're benefiting them. You know, in a way, you're interfering with them. I mean, there are exceptions. Okay. There are exceptions. You could pray for a family member, for instance, that doesn't want to be prayed for, but because they're a family member, you're going to pray anyway. Your motive is loving, so it's not going to be a thing. But a lot of times, when we go pray for somebody and if they want it or not, or they don't know we're doing it or not, we're getting to this area where we think we know what's best for them. And that leads us right into this idea of goal direction again.
And some people don't want you to pray for them.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. They don't, so I wouldn't.
Interesting. Okay. So I understand what you're saying. So when I do a prayer that's a non-goal directed prayer, do I have to say more than "Thy will be done"? I mean, I can personalize it a little, you know, in my own words.
Well, what you have to do is find a. And by the way, on the founders page on the website SpindriftResearch.org, when you go to founders, I have. Six or seven examples of goal-directed prayers and six or seven examples of non-goal-directed prayers. If you want to go there, that would give you some information.
Sure.
You actually have examples.
Okay.
The trick is, with goal-directed prayer, you know the result you want. With non-goal-directed prayer, you don't know the result you want. You are open to the creative mind of divine intelligence bringing that result about. So whatever you pray about non-goal-directedly, make sure it is open to change and not necessarily anything you can anticipate. It's just like psychic things in this sense. you'll notice that the greatest psychic experiences most people have, most people, you can find people that are exceptions, but it's usually a spontaneous, unexpected circumstance. They're not looking for it. It happens when they're least expected.
Pretty much.
Because they're not trying too hard. They're not trying too hard. And with non-goal-directed prayer, when you're not trying too hard, when you're just open and not thinking of a specific thing, this is when you get the best results.
Okay.
That's not easy to do as a human being.
No, it's because
I can say to you, I don't want you to think of pink elephants.
Boom. Right.
So, now, if you are one of these people who can actually wipe that out of your thought, you are a fantastic potential healer.
Okay, or an enlightened person.
So I'd like to actually, since you mentioned healing, I'd like to get back to the healing that's done in the Christian Science Church. So when a healer offers a prayer for healing, is that goal-directed? And how can it not be when they know that there's a specific thing that needs to take place?
That is a very deep question, but the fact of the matter is they're usually not praying about the specific problem.
Okay.
In an emergency situation, they pray goal-directed, yes. An emergency life and death thing, an immediate situation, yes. But most of the time, it's something else. Let's say you take 10 people with, what could be the 10 people with a cancer problem, let's say. In medicine would say probably, of course, medicine's changed a little bit in this area, too. They would say that there's a treatment that basically probably there's some treatment that would probably be common to all the 10 treatments. In the Christian Science treatment, you would have, there's 10 different problems. You'd have 10 different problems. It's not the same problem. You'd be finding out what is it in the personality of the problem what's causing the problem here? What's underneath all this? Now, in a couple of cases, it might very well be that it is strictly a medical problem and the person would be better off going to a normal accepted physician than a Christian Science. But in a lot of cases, the prayer uncovers what the real problem is.
Sure.
And when you get to that, then you've gotten to the situation that needed healing. You bring up something else, too, that I just thought of. The goal-directed prayer usually connects with the material organism, the material appearances going on. That's when you're talking about, it's got the specific problem. You look at somebody, you have to pray for that specific thing. Yeah, sometimes we have to do that, but most of the time, goal-directed prayer addresses the material organism with the things you can see. The non-goal-directed prayer addresses what we can't see. It brings out the spiritual identity of the person. Christian Science practitioner is always emphasizing that we are children of God, we're spiritual, we're the divine image and likeness of God. That's your true identity. And the more you learn that identity, the more it pushes out the things that are causing your problems.
Sure.
So the non-goal directed addresses the invisible and the unconscious mind much more than does goal directed prayer. And it's another whole interesting thing, too. What we are addressing in prayer generally, and a Christian Science practitioner specifically, if I can use the word specific, you are addressing the unconscious thought, not the conscious thought. Well, gee, if we knew what was consciously driving us nuts or causing us problems, we wouldn't need anybody else to help us. It's the things we can't see and understand that are going underneath us that we don't know. Those are the things that need to be uncovered.
Right. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. Well, and I like what you say also about the link between the non-goal-directed prayer and creativity, because I think that creativity is, I tend to think of myself as an extremely creative person because I'm a writer and I'm a musician and, all that stuff. So creativity is extremely important to me, as is kind of going with the flow and being intuitive and that type of thing. Sorry, that was just an editorial. I forgot where I was going with it.
Let me add to that.
Okay.
If you go to our spindriftresearch.org page and go to FAQ, Frequently Asked Questions, the second question deals with exactly what you're talking about. It deals with quality. This is another big term in the Spindrift research. We say regular thought and manipulative thought has some quality or has no quality. If it's really bad thought, it's a negative thought, it's a non-quality thought. But it's the quality thought that imbues non-goal-directed prayer and imbues creativity. The more quality you have in you, And we use the word quality like it was used in the book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. Did you ever read that book way back when?
Oh, a long time ago, yeah.
That had a great section on quality. Well, we were trying to find a way to communicate with the public how we mean quality, and we would mean it in that sense.
Okay.
The quality is, you can even, if you're religious, you could think of it as the Christ or the truth or the divine influence, however you want, but we would say quality with a capital Q. That's what brings improvement in relationships, in art, in music, our musicianship, our writing. Well, you know, you've heard the term quality writing, for heaven's sakes. What does it mean? It's a higher writing.
It usually means my editors want me to redo something, but no, I'm kidding. Yeah, I've heard
good.
The term many times.
Isn't that a good thing? Isn't editing a good thing?
Editing's a great thing. I am absolutely terribly grateful for my editors because they make me so much better than I am without them.
I got a lot of advice, too. I wrote my book over 15 times.
Yeah?
And it probably still needs work, but it's hard to convey psychic and consciousness and spiritual terms in human language. That's what I found out.
Absolutely. So, and this may be a difficult question to ask, or it may be something, or answer, or maybe something you've already answered. So I'm looking at this across the application of all faiths or lack of faith. How does it apply in a broad way so that somebody who's a Christian Scientist, somebody who's a Buddhist, or somebody who's an atheist can put it to work in their lives?
Well, I think that we could all test these two styles of prayer out on their own lives and see which one actually brings the long-lasting, more complete result. I think that that's how we could benefit by trifold styles and see which one actually enlightens you or not. One gets you things and the other one enlightens you. That's the difference. So I'd rather be enlightened than have things.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, so that's how it benefits people. And again, some people are doing this nine-goal directed prayer. Some Buddhists, for example, do this automatically. They don't even, aren't putting them in our terms, but they just kind of do it automatically. And there have been Buddhist monks that have prayed and taken crime down in certain areas. You've heard about those, right? Those examples,
sure.
Right?
Sure,
yeah.
Yeah. Now, the problem there is it doesn't linger. It doesn't linger. When the prayer stops, the crime starts going up again. But even so, it makes the point that there is a psychic spiritual effect. And if we can make that argument, and like Spindrift, why are you dealing with plants instead of people or healing the world? If we can make a point that there's something going on here, that's all you have to do in science.
Right.
That's all the great scientific discoveries all started out with tiny little things happening on a petri dish or something, and then it went out to the whole world.
Right.
So
when you were talking,
that would be a big thing.
When you were talking about the Buddhist experiments with the crime or the Buddhist meditation with crime, were you talking about because I know that they also did projects with transcendental, is that how you say it? Transcendental meditation, and
yes.
That lowered crime in areas as well. Is that the same thing, or is that something different?
Well, Buddhist is more Zen.
I thought it was the Buddhist. Was it transcendental meditation? I have to go back to me. I thought it was the Buddha sitting around in a circle and chanting and praying, but maybe it was transcendental meditation too. But if it has the right motive, it amounts to the same thing. Non-goal directed prayer doesn't have to be limited to a certain group. It can be people just either have this type of thought in them, or they have the other type of thought in them, or they get no results. But
right.
The point is that what we can do is to find people who are healers for the world and use them this way for the non-goal directed, bring out results that are unexpected. If you look at the history of maybe the last 50 years, 100 years, however you want to be, look at all the procrastinations people said for the future, but none of it turned out right. Nobody was right about anything. Everything turned out completely in an unexpected way. So somebody's praying in an unexpected way.
Right. But and it could just be
look at all the predictions that have. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and it could just be one person who's doing that, that's making that big of a difference?
That would have to be a very powerfully psychic individual. I mean,
no, actually, I think they're cooperating in collective consciousness. They just don't know each other. That's all. No, it's more than one person.
Okay.
So do you think that having that one of, just in listening to what you're saying, it sounds to me like one of the main things that you need to really be someone who's effective at non-directed prayer is you need humility.
Yes, I don't have it.
No, me either.
No.
Wish I did.
And you're right. It's the ability to acknowledge that the power isn't in us. We're a conduit, but the power isn't us. We're opening up to an infinite divine intelligence that works via us and goes out and affects things. And that's
we're like
humility.
We're like the arrows, or no, let's see, it's like a bow and arrow, and we're like the
mirrors. We have the mirrors, and we got to clean our mirrors and reflect some of this.
Oh, there you go. So, so then I lost what I was going to say again.
About arrow. Go ahead. What is that? There might be an analogy to the arrow, too. I have to work on it.
Well, okay, because because I'm a mother, and uh-huh. I describe my son is that I'm the bow and he's the arrow. It's up to him to fly straight and true, and he just comes through me. So
that's, I like that. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, so that's my analogy. So I was trying to see if that would work with the, and I think it does. I just can't put it all together right now. But
maybe the idea of let me just ad lib here a little bit.
Okay.
Maybe when we pray in secret where nobody knows what we're praying. We're the bow and we shoot the arrow out, and as long as it's in secret, that arrow is going to go to the right target. But if we let other people know that arrow is coming, then it's going to go off course.
Sure. Okay,
right.
That works.
That actually makes sense.
Wow. You know, I have to tell you, I think that maybe when you get resistance. It's because you call it prayer, and I think that prayer is the that people sort of feel like they have the inside track on prayer. Do you know what I mean by that?
Do I ever know about that? Yes, some of our hate mail is like that. I mean, we have a lot of people say that they don't doubt for a minute that we're getting results, but our results are coming from Satan. They aren't coming from God or a divine source. So.
No, okay. Because God would never want to make the world a better place, right?
Yes. It's incredible, the resistance out there. It is really something. And we also found, and then you'd be interested in this, that when we did our tests, and we just did our tests among our little group, that was fine. But the more people that knew about the tests when we were doing them, it would hinder the results. So there's a thing about privacy that relates to this whole area.
Well, I think that faith and prayer and belief is a very, very private thing. As a matter of fact, I was telling Rick this before we came on the air tonight, is that tomorrow I have to, or Saturday, I'm speaking at a conference. And normally I speak about things that have nothing to do with me other than peripherally, because I'm interested in them. And this one I have to speak about very private things that have to do with my faith and my belief and my abilities. And I'm having a really hard time coming up with it because it's such a deeply personal thing to stand up in front of a group of people and talk about that. So don't you think that maybe that might be partially why? Because
when you get people's emotions involved, it becomes a real jigsaw puzzle. That's for sure.
Sure. But also,
I'm this way too. I mean, if you ask me to give an example of a psychic experience or a spiritual experience, I would tend to give somebody else's experience than my own, because I feel people are going to make fun of me if I tell my own experience.
Exactly. This is what I think. This is what I'm wondering about privacy. In private, do you think that most people tend to be more authentic than in public?
Well, I think that's about the most verifiable thing we've talked about tonight.
Exactly. So
between you and the divine source, there's a lot of negativity. Oh, it doesn't do it. Negativity. You're naked before that. You can't lie there.
Right, and that's what I mean. So that's the difference between the private and the non-private is that it's purely authentic.
Well, that's part of it, yes. But it's also that you're not having other people interfere with you.
Sure.
I mean, haven't you ever had the experience, and I'm sure I've had it many times, where you're looking at something, let's say you're looking at a painting, or and all of a sudden you notice that somebody's looking at you, and you feel funny, you turn around, somebody's looking at you, or they're looking at the same thing you're looking at, they're interfering with what you're thinking about, you can actually feel them. You don't even mean it, but you can feel them.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's the same thing here. People, intentionally or unintentionally, can interfere with your
thinking when you're praying. You don't want that. In fact, that's what Jesus is telling us. Go into a room, close the door, shut everything out, and pray in secret. Make it a secret.
Wow, I've got a lot to think about now tonight. You, sir, blew my mind. Job well.
Oh, thank you. Well, it has been fun talking to you. And if you ever step inside a Faraday cage, it is quite an experience. It's like going back in time before you, with the atmosphere had all these radio waves and satellite waves and cable TV going through the earth. It's actually going back to a pre-electronic time because all that's blocked out. It feels different.
I totally want to go in one because I'm very susceptible to energies. But I'm also energies from other people as well as all of that. So yeah, I think I'll make that one of my new goals is to get in a Faraday cage. I've seen little ones, you know, that you can put over your hands.
That's a good goal, by the way. That's a good goal.
There you go. So I wanted to, before we let you go, I would like to have you give out the website, give out the name of the book, where they can find it, if you're going to be speaking anywhere, all of that stuff.
Okay, well, the speaking engagements, they'll be coming up again soon. Right now, I'm not doing any. Hope you have a real good speaking engagement on Saturday.
Thank you.
And I hope that I can I'll send you an email about this conference that we're having here in Evanston Saturday that I'm going to attend. It's fantastic on near-death experiences.
Yeah, Rick, you should go to that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
I've always been interested in that.
So we'll get your email on that. My email, you can reach my email through the Spindrift website, spindriftresearch.org or spindriftresearch.com, either one. I'm Bill Sweet. My book is A Journey into Prayer, Pioneers of Prayer in the Laboratory by Bill Sweet. It's hardcover, softcover, and it's on Kindle also. There are a number of, well, actually, the radio shows are like yours. I mean, the people can find it on the Internet, but on the our Spindrift website, I have a television show interview that I did that you can go out there and watch.
Cool.
Okay.
Under media. And the FAQ page at our website tells about the major contributions and minor contributions that Spindrift has made to research, we feel. And
it's a great website. Lots of information on it.
Yeah.
We've gotten a lot of compliments on that. It's very different. It's some people always tell me, I've never seen anything quite that I could compare it to. It's different.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of interesting email. And my book, again, is A Journey into Prayer. You can get it to the website. Just click Amazon.com or exlibris.com, which is my publisher. It's very interesting to see. There's a lot more middlemen involved in the Amazon than going directly to the publisher, but that's
boy, isn't that the case?
Oh, you know all about that. Oh,
I do. Yep, definitely.
Yeah, so I encourage people to go to exlibris.com. I encourage them to go there.
Okay, that sounds good.
Then you can get it. Just click the book news. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And if people have questions, they can email us. And thank you for the great opportunity to be on your wonderful radio show.
Oh, it's been absolutely fascinating. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I hope to talk to you again.
Okay.
All right. Hey. Have a good evening, and thank you very much.
Good night, Bill.
Thank you.
So there he goes, Bill Sweet. Wow, that was actually really amazingly fascinating, wasn't it, Rick?
Yeah, you know, I would definitely say so, and it gave me a lot to think about. You know, oftentimes when I do talk to people about prayer, you know, it seems like, you know, and we did talk about it briefly tonight. There was like, it just, that goal-oriented prayer, not just briefly, but quite a bit, the goal-oriented prayer, it seems like people really are very selfish and that, you know, don't you think that kind of like makes, you know, God, the higher power, whatever you want to, you know, say that it is, doesn't it seem that it makes it kind of small?
Kind of like a sugar daddy. Yeah, that's what I was talking about limiting God or higher power or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
So definitely. And, you know, the other thing I was thinking as we were talking to Bill, I'm sorry, my dog's just freaked out. You probably heard him. Anyway, the other thing I was thinking about as we were talking to Bill is, oh, crap. I swear I have Alzheimer's tonight. There's something wrong with me. It'll come back to me in a minute. So you talk. My dog's knocked it out of me.
See, that's what it is. And you gotta put yourself in one of those Faraday cages.
I do need to get out from that. Totally. Oh, I know what it was. As Bill was talking about it, one of the things that I've always been very, very uncomfortable with is although, like I say, we you know, I don't necessarily identify myself as Christian right now, even though I was raised in the Christian church. We do attend a Christian church occasionally because I've always wanted to give the kids the opportunity to see all kinds of faiths and make their own choices as they were adults. So we attend a Methodist church here in town. And one of the things I've always been terribly uncomfortable with is when people say, pray for this, pray for that, I'll pray for you. And I have never been able to say, I will pray for you to somebody. And I've always thought that that's made me a really awful, selfish person.
No, but I think it would make you an awful selfish person if you said, oh, yeah, I'm going to pray so much for you, and then you don't do it.
Well, that's true, but it's just, it's something that I'm uncomfortable, and it's usually, you know, it's things like, well, pray for us because we're driving across the mountains and it's snowing. And to me, that just doesn't seem like what God's there for.
Right. No, so, I would agree with that. You know, if there is, you know, a God, and maybe I'm thinking of it in the westernized Christian
personal, individualized God.
Yeah, I mean, if there is such a thing, he is the one that's in control, or she, whatever it is, they are the ones that are actually in control. You're just kind of like a vessel to do their will.
Yeah, I'm glad that you corrected it to she, or I was going to rush Limbaugh and call your advertisers and tell him to not support you because you're so anti-women.
No. Oh, God, I think anybody who knows me would say that. No, yeah, definitely. You know, it's funny, too, because I do believe, and I'm going to do something I rarely quote here, is quote the Bible. You know, God is neither male nor female, but as a spiritual a being of pure spirit. So...
Yeah. There you go. Well, you know, yeah. I actually have in kind of my search for prayer and faith and everything else, because I've had such an uneasy relationship with faith throughout my life, I've gotten pretty heavily into the biblical scholarship and reading what biblical scholars talk about what the Bible really is about and the life mm-hmm. of Jesus and everything else. And I've always felt that what you see, unfortunately, in so many religions is a small God and is a small version of Christ and is a small version of Jesus, who was this amazing man who did these wonderful things, regardless of whether he was born of a virgin and regardless of whether he was resurrected, and, you know, and so for me, it's always interesting to talk about things from a faith perspective. And what I like about what Bill was doing is that, yeah, there's an element of faith there, but he's talking about it across all faiths.
Yeah. You know what? I find, though, when I talk to a lot of different people from, like, you know, the westernized idea of faith is, you know, a lot of them, they're so into themselves.
Sure.
Well, you know what I'm saying?
You know, that's actually like one of the sort of trending things in a lot of the big box churches right now, is that the kind of the Joel Osteen pray your way to prosperity and, you know, all of that stuff. And I think that that's a really big thing, because that's what's pulling people into churches right now, because we live in a really dark time.
Yeah.
And I think that you could probably say that of almost any time in history anyway, but we're only alive in this time, and so this is the only time we know. So to us, we feel like this is the really dark time.
Yeah.
And so I think that people are looking to God to feel better, and the promises of prosperity and things like The Secret, where you set your intention, and you know, all of those things, what they do is they pull people in to it for selfish reasons, and then mm-hmm. I think that you decide once you're there what that means to you, whether it becomes about making the world a better place or making your world a better place, and they're two very different things.
Well, you know, the thing that I've always wondered is one of these days the world is going to come to an end, and existence as we know it will be gone, and we'll all be around God or whatever it is, and he, she, whatever is just going to say, you know what, you're all wrong. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that would be the ultimate in irony. You're all wrong. None of you got it right. So
I'm just a giant crab from the planet Melmac.
Exactly. Oh, Gordon Shumway, Alf. But yeah, you know, one of these days we're all going to find out. Nobody can really call themselves an expert in this kind of thing.
Not yet.
You know, faith. I'm going to quote the Bible again here. I believe the Bible said in the New Testament, faith is a conviction of things hoped for and belief in the existence of things not seen.
Yeah.
So it's like you really, really have to believe in something. You have to have that belief system in order for something to happen. I'm not a Christian, okay? So therefore, my prayers to a God aren't going to exist because I don't believe in the Christian idea of God. So there's definitely has to be that belief system there first. And then that belief system has to be altruistic in order for those prayers to reach the ears of whatever may be out there.
Right.
So that's personally what I believe. I mean, that's my personal philosophy.
Yeah. Well, I've struggled with it for 46 years, and, you know, I am 46, which means that I came out of the womb kicking and fighting against about what I believed and what I didn't believe. It's something it's my struggle with faith has actually been to me a defining characteristic of who I am. And in a lot of ways, and that's part of what I'm talking about on Saturday, is that this is the very definition of who I am as a person who struggles with faith. And that's not always great for the self-esteem when you're around all these people who are very assured of their faith. But I can buy into what Bill's talking about, because I think that it's beyond just a faith in a certain set of tenets. And instead it's just saying, I'm going to put this energy out there that the greatest good comes that possibly can come out of any situation.
Yeah. I you know what? I still say that if you're going to affect any kind of real change, then you need to get out there and do something about it rather than, you know, sitting in one of these cages or sitting in a church on Sunday morning. You need to get out there and affect that real kind of change. I believe it was Mahatma Gandhi who said, "You must be the change you want to see in the world."
You are just a quoting fool.
Well, no,
I'm just teasing you. No, I absolutely agree. I think that prayer is important, and I think that action is important. It's thought, word, and deed, and I think you need to be faithful to those things. And, you know, I want to make the world a better place, and I do that through my meditative practices, but mm-hmm. I also do try to do things that through the things that I write and through the way that I interact with other people and through the projects that I take on and through the way I'm raising my children. I mean, there's a million ways that you can get out there and make the world a better place. And I think that putting that good energy and that prayer out there is definitely one of them.
Sure. But getting out there and doing something about it too is also adds for a lot.
That's right. I'm a woman of action, so there you go. Hey, Cheryl.
You're an action hero.
Cheryl.
Yes, hi.
I just wanted you to come on with your stuffy nose so people could hear you.
I was wondering when it was going to happen.
your sexy phlegm voice. Yeah. So what's going on the show in upcoming episodes?
Well, I can tell you about next week.
That'll be good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have author Lori Hines talking to us, and she is an author of a paranormal mystery novel. We actually featured her in the magazine a while back, but it's called The Ancient Ones, and it's kind of interesting because while it's fictional, she did a lot of on-site investigation and investigating with paranormal teams as research.
Groovy. Okay.
So, yeah, it should be interesting. And then, you don't know it yet, but I was going to ask you if we could bring back a segment for the last part of the show that we used to do.
Do you want, I was thinking about it today, do you want the lightning round back?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I can start bringing back the lightning round, absolutely. I needed a little break from it. I was, with my Guardian and Lightum work, things were a little intense for a while.
Yeah.
And things are finally starting to be some breathing room, and I'm sleeping better at night because I was telling you guys before the show, you kind of grow a little bit of a callus, not that you don't care, but that when you see things, they don't keep you awake at night or you'll go crazy.
Yeah,
Some of them still do, but a lot of them don't anymore. So, I mean, it used to be heavily
medicated.
Yeah, it used to be every little thing. Now it's just the occasional thing. So, yes, we can bring back the lightning round. How many questions do you want, and who are we bringing on to do it? Teresa?
Yay. Oh, I'd love it if Teresa would want to come back on.
But she's in the chat room, so she can respond appropriately. Also, I wanted to make sure that we invite everybody out this weekend at the Oregon Ghost Conference, because I will be speaking there, and, you know, I always have lots and lots and lots to say. Yeah. Oh, Cheryl, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You had something else.
Okay. For live listeners, we have some tickets that we can give away to the Mid-Ohio Paranormal Convention. It's put on by Keith Age and others, but it's Friday, through Sunday, April 27th through the 29th. And this week, we are able to give away a weekend pass, I believe.
Awesome. And paranormal conventions, for any of you who have never gone, they're a blast, and you get to network and meet people, and you get to talk about, like, ghosts and stuff for a whole weekend.
Networking is what it's all about.
That's right.
Yeah, and I think this particular one is in Louisville.
So how are we giving this away, Cheryl?
Well, I figure that anyone who's listening live can email me at editor@paranormalunderground.net. And depending on how many people are interested, I can just, you know, pull their name out of a hat or whatever.
And we'll announce it next week on the show.
Exactly.
You know, it's fascinating that Scotty would even trust us with this.
Scotty, you know, he's a fool. He trusts us with a lot of things that he really should. He's been on the show. He knows how we are. He knows what we do.
Scotty's cool.
I know. Yeah. Thank you, Scotty. You rock. And also, again, I wanted to really thank all of our listeners to our show. We really appreciate you, and without you, we would be nothing. So do we have anything else, Cheryl, before we head out the door?
No, I just want to say, if anybody hasn't read the January-February issue of Paranormal Underground magazine, they can read it for free at paranormalunderground.net.
Two of the best writers in the world write for it.
Holla. Yes. Hello. Thanks, Rick and Karen.
You got it.
Or they can buy, actually, a copy and have it mailed to them if they want to go to MagCloud. Just search for Paranormal Underground, and you can order the magazine by issue. We don't actually have a subscription, but you can...
Karen will autograph it for you.
Yeah, it's on demand.
Yeah, if you come see me this weekend and you bring something, I'll sign it, because my autograph is worth millions.
Yay.
Millions of, like, what's, like, the most devalued unit of currency? And isn't, like, a rupee a million rupees worth, like, a penny?
Yeah. Probably.
So, you know, that's what it's worth millions of. It's worth millions of feathers. There you go. You can make yourself a down comforter or something. So,
there you go.
Come out and see me this weekend in Oregon City at the Oregon Ghost Conference. I'll look forward to seeing some really good friends there that I haven't seen in a while, and I'm sure I'll have lots to report back in on next week. Also next week, we didn't talk about it this week, also next week I can, hopefully I'll have some information. I had a paranormal investigation done in my home, folks. And so they haven't done their reveal yet. There was some interesting activity here, but there always is. And
did you just say reveal?
That's what they called it.
Okay, please proceed.
I wouldn't call it that, but that's what they called it. So, but, you know, we always have some kind of good stuff going on, and I'd love to talk about that next week as well. So, we had a great show, and I really wanted to thank Bill Sweet again. It was just, that was wonderful.
Great conversation. Very interesting.
Yeah, I like talking to him.
Okay, so... here's the deal. Join us next Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and other times in what, Cheryl?
The flyover states.
That's right. Paranormal Underground Radio on Z Talk Radio. We'll talk to you next week. Good night.
Bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net, and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z Talk Radio Network.